started the meeting. Please call on to participate later. But first off, we have a guest speaker that will share for 30 to 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we ask that you mind the time of your sharing so that everyone has a chance to participate. It's now my pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker, Ms. Stephanie, currently from Visalia.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Stephanie.
My sobriety date is May 23rd, 1994. And my home group is the primary purpose group. We meet on Thursday night at 7 p.m. at 526 North First Street. And I want to thank Bill for asking me to share. It was really good about keeping us in mind and people from our group. So I really appreciate that, Bill. Thanks. And I want to thank Teddy for coming to always coming to see me share. He's heard my story a thousand times at home. And thank God he didn't live it with me, though. Some of it. And I want to thank Dave and Brittany, too, for coming out. Anyway, I was really trying to, I was a little nervous. It hasn't been so long since I spoke, and I share a lot at a meeting. So it was good to be at a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I actually like a smaller meeting. I just feel a lot more comfortable, and I like that it's just starting. That was really good, right? Because it's just like kind of an old school meeting, you know, just put together, besides the hybrid, which is all new. But other than that, so anyway, just a little bit about myself. I grew up in Southern California. I'm going to make it short because I want to actually get to what I, you know, kind of like what my higher power was giving me to share on tonight. So I just wanted to say that I grew up in Southern California. I was in a military family. You know, one of the things that I like to talk about is that when I was younger, I always felt kind of like a dork, like I didn't fit in, and just uncomfortable. I just always kind of felt uncomfortable, and I had a feeling pretty early on that I wasn't going to be able to measure up to my family's expectations. Although they weren't that high, I just still felt like I wasn't the type of person that they needed me to be, which was athletic and, you know, popular and all these things. And, you know, doing a lot of stuff. And I just felt like I couldn't do any of that. And anyway, right before I went to high school, I ended up drinking. I just have to tell you that once I started drinking, those feelings that I have of inadequacy and feeling uncomfortable, that stuff just like magically went away, you know, and it was awesome. And I was like, this is great. I really felt on top of the world. I felt like I measured up. Not only that, but it also gave me this empowerment. The alcohol, I loved it. And the first time I really drank, I drank 2 40-ounces of Old English. That was a lot of booze, and I did absolutely puke. But man, I was in heaven, right? I'm just like, this is the best experience. And so I knew from that point forward that that's what I was going to be doing. I just, even so, that's what I set out to do in my life is just to, you know, I grew up in the 80s. I went to high school in the 80s. So it was all about, you know, these rock videos and things like that. And so that's what I wanted to aspire to, right? Just being this video girl with this rock band and everything, which was not the aspirations my family had for me, that's for sure. So anyway, you know, come the end of high school, I was not doing well at all. I ended up at 18, right after graduating, I ended up on a 5150, and I was placed in a mental institution / rehab, and I was there for about a month, and I was having outside issues as well, along with the booze, And so I said to myself once I left that place that I was never going to do, well, actually I said I was never going to do anything. I'm just going to be sober. I'm good. I can't do that stuff. I really messed up. Like, I lost a couple of jobs. I disappointed my family. I stole money from my mom. I did a whole bunch of things. It was just a bad situation. Initially, I thought it was a great situation, but it turned out to be a bad situation. So after I got out of there, I started to go through the psych tech program. And I don't know, somewhere along the line, and truthfully, I can't even remember when. And I think that this has a lot to do with the obsession. You know, when we talk about craving and obsession, it's like with the craving, in step one, once I stick that booze in my body, I cannot control the amount I take after that, right? But I don't know when that happened. I can't tell you when it happened. It happened at some point, but just like the book says, I'm sure it happened long before I knew it. And if anyone was to say, Stephanie, you have an issue with your drinking, you're drinking a little bit too much, I would definitely think that they were just a buzzkill and be like, you have got to go, right? I can't. You're too much. You're controlling. And my favorite thing was always about, you're jealous. You're jealous. They're all jealous, right? Because I'm having fun. I'm having fun. So, anyway, I started to go through the psych tech program, and I don't know what happened. Like I said, I was drinking again. I'm not really sure how that happened, but I just started drinking. I graduated that program. I got my license. I started working at Cameron State Hospital, which is now Channel Islands University. And it was like Party City over there in the 90s. I don't know. It could be. I think if you work at the state, it's just like that anyway. I don't know if it was a state worker or in an institution. I feel like we're a nurse or whatever. I just feel like these people party all the time, right? So that's what I was doing. And I worked a perfect shift. I worked PM shift, so I would drink in the morning before I went, and then after I got off work at 11, I would go to the bars until 2, and after that I would go home, and I would continue to drink, and a lot of times bring people with me, which was an issue with my aunt at the time, who was my roommate, and she had a son that was 10 years younger than me, so she wasn't too happy about that. I would be up all night, so. And eventually it came that I couldn't make it to work anymore. I would say, okay, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to go to bed, and I'm going to stop drinking because I knew I was going to drink in the morning. I would stop drinking, let's say, about, I would say in my mind, I'm going to stop drinking at noon, so then by 3 I could go in. But come noon, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't pull it off. So I would continue to drink. And then I just started not going in. And eventually I left that job, and I do have an AWOL on my state record for being an employee there because I left. I didn't let anyone know. I was hiding out. They're trying to call me, telling me to come back to work. I wouldn't answer the phone. I did show up to collect my last check. For sure I did that. But, yeah, and then from there, it just went downhill, and I continued to drink, but I have to tell you, like, that was the time of my life. I was in bars every night, dancing, thinking I was, feeling good, getting evicted from my apartment on the beach. I ended up borrowing some checks from a neighbor and started writing a whole bunch of checks, and I had the intention of paying the stores and stuff back and the creditors, so I used my own ID. Because I wasn't a great criminal, so I was out there with my own ID with my name on it, and they would take that down, and eventually I ended up with 14 counts of felony forgery, and got arrested. I was going in and out of jail several times, and it was humiliating, and I talked to a lot of women. I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of women, which I love to do, and even men, it's just not easy out there. It just isn't. And it's, to suffer that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And coming from a family that was pretty conservative, and they didn't have a lot of people who were out of control. My grandfather definitely drank and probably was an alcoholic, although I don't want to determine that for him. But he was able to work. He worked up until the day he died. And he was able to do things in the community. You know, it was just at home. He just drank until he passed out. And for me, I was the person who drank, and I couldn't do any of those things. I couldn't work. I couldn't show up. I couldn't have a life. I could do nothing. And so my life was just in the toilet. And like I said, I was, you know, facing all these legal charges. They put me on diversion because I hadn't been in trouble before. And back then, when you were on, it's not like drug court. I've sat in drug court a lot of times, you guys. It's really not helpful. But, I mean, I sat there for my cousin, the one that's 10 years younger than me. And it's just, you know, when I was on that diversion program, I had to show up once a week, and they would come out and see me. It was almost like I was on parole. And I would have to test in front of somebody randomly and do all these things. And I was always violating. And they kept catching me because more checks would come in. So I would get, like, another charge. And eventually, I went in to see this guy. And the person I was with at the time, they ended up going to prison. So I was alone with them, like, wandering the streets and stuff. And the probation officers, you know, just asking point blank, when are you going to allow people to stop controlling your life? You know, he's like, everyone's controlling you. The probation department, and he named a whole bunch of other things that I had to do at the time. And I just looked at him and I said, you know, I can't change. This is just who I am. I can't change. There's no hope for me. I was completely hopeless, like it talks about in the whole story. I knew that there was no way that I could combat alcohol. And I knew at that point in time there was no way that I could stop drinking. And so, he sent me to a 90-day program back then. It was called the Treatment Center. It was called Recovery Home. And they were pretty hardcore. There wasn't a lot of treatment or family involvement. It was pretty much the attitude of you're a scumbag and you need to change. And that's exactly what I needed, to tell you the truth. I mean, they were hard on us in there, but it was helpful because I had to do things like work or wash cars if I wanted to buy cigarettes. You know, I couldn't depend on other people. I couldn't try to get people to do things for me. And so I stayed in there for 90 days, and I have to tell you, it was nothing that I did. Because I've been given opportunities over and over again. A lot of my story is going to church and trying to sober up through church, and that was not effective either. I was baptized so many times. And, you know, I was given plenty of opportunities. I know now that God removed my obsession for booze. He took it away. You know, he took away that mental illness that I have. My mental illness, my alcoholism that I was unaware of, is at that time was removed. I didn't think about booze. I didn't want booze. It was so weird. I was just able, and I was still very crazy, but I was able to stay in that program. And from that point forward, I never drank again. I've been sober since that time, which is, you know, God's grace. As I, you know, was involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did everything they asked me to do. I was going to meetings. I was, you know, I was part of H&I. I was taking people into a California Youth Authority. I was speaking. I was the gate person. I was washing coffee cups. That's when we had coffee cups at meetings and stuff, and cleaning ashtrays, and, you know, I would go to all these speaker meetings. Everything I did in my life was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always had this underlying fear. Somewhere I was taught that, you know, I had to rely on these people. I had to call my sponsor and get a plan. I had to go to these meetings. I had to make sure if I went anywhere, to any family function, to anything that I showed up to, I had to have a member of AA. I could not do anything independent, you know, alone. Because there was always that fear that maybe I would drink. And, you know, this is kind of what I was taught. And so I continued to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was, you know, waiting for myself to be happy, joyous, and free. I felt like I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was waiting and waiting, and the longer I stayed sober, the worse I got. And I was thinking, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm mentally ill, right? Because I'm nervous, I'm anxious, like I can't stand anybody, I don't want to work, I would go to work and I would go shopping. Like, I wasn't even working. I was getting paid a lot of money. I was supposed to be doing mental health case management. And I'm at Kohl's. I was in Massachusetts at the time. I'm just like a lunatic. And, and I was like, they were trying to fire me, and I got the union involved, you know, because back there we had a union, it's a big union state, and I was like, absolutely not. And I wasn't doing crap. I mean, I really deserve to be fired. And this isn't sobriety. I mean, this is, we call it sobriety, right? But that's what I was doing. And all along, I really was still going to meetings, and I was working with some people, but guess what? They were Al-Anons. Because no one in AA ever asked me to sponsor them prior to me going through these 12 steps about 11 years ago, because they could just feel the sickness coming off of me. And no one wanted what I had. You know, they're like, yeah, if I could read you a little portion, right? Where it's like you're not supposed to lecture and you have to, who you have to be as the sponsor. And there's no way I was doing that. I'm like, wait, let me give you all kinds of advice and I'm going to dictate your life to you, right? And that's what I was taught. That's what I was taught. You need to go to 5 meetings a week and church on Sunday and I want you to read these things and blah, blah, blah. I was doing all that and I got sick, sick, sick. I almost got fired from that job. I got another divorce. I left Massachusetts, came back to California. I was in a horrible state, so depressed. Before this, I had gone to the psychiatrist. I'm like, I'm crazy, I'm stressed, I'm paranoid, nothing can help me, blah, blah, blah. They couldn't help me. I went to a counselor for a year. I was like, I hate my mother, right? They couldn't help me. Nothing that they did was effective. And they had no idea what's wrong with me, nor did I. So I left, I came back here, I was literally suicidal. I'm like, this is it. I don't know what to do. I'm so unhappy. And I had my daughter. She was 11 at the time. And in 2009, I moved here. In 2010, I heard Teddy speak at a meeting at the Iwano Club. And whatever he was sharing about at that time, and at that time I had 15 years sober, and I was thinking, what is this guy sharing about? It was so weird. I couldn't really understand one word he was saying. But he was talking about this 12-step language, you know? And it hit me right in the heart. But at the same time, I felt a bit disturbed. Because I was like, wait a minute, I haven't heard this before. And I mean, I've been in big cities. I've been in Boston, Massachusetts. I've been in L.A. I mean, I can go on and on. I've been in Clancy's group. I mean, I've heard these circuit speakers like nobody's business. Right? And I'm thinking, what is this guy in this little rinky-dink town in this little weird Iwano Club talking about? And I had to find out where this home group was, so I ended up going to the home group at Bridge Street, and I liked it there. I actually had been going to that group anyway for a new meeting that I was pretty involved in because I worked right in the Oval there at the time. And so I started going on Thursday, and they hooked me up with the woman, and, you know, they said I needed to go through the steps. But initially when I went to the meeting, I felt like it was very structured, and I felt like they were a little bit, you know, strict, and I didn't feel like they were that loving and stuff. And but guess what? I stayed because I was insane and I had nowhere to go, and that's really the bottom line. I was in what we call the treated alcoholism. And I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I was never satisfied. I was easily annoyed, and I was ready to kill anyone in front of me. I had no relationships with my family. They were there, but I couldn't really stand anybody. And I was almost getting fired from the new job I got. People were irritating me there. I felt like I should run that place. You know, I'm all, what are they? And I mean, I'm probably like, I have people under the manager there. Or sick. I mean, I'm a low man, and I'm just thinking, this guy's an idiot. He was a doctor, somebody or another. I thought, what does he know? So anyway, if you read Bill's story, right, like me, I love it, because Bill really is so egotistical. He is so cool, because he's like, The men of my company gave me a special token of their appreciation, and I knew I was going to, you know, be something. I was a leader, right? And this is me. This is just the way that I think. I'm very egotistical. I never suffer from low self-esteem. Like we saw, a lot of times people come in and they're like, yes, I suffer from low self-esteem. But in writing inventory, I figured out it wasn't low self-esteem. It was just that people didn't see me in the way that I needed them to, and it would piss me off, right? But I'd be like, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't think I'm the smartest one? What do you mean you know more than me? What do you mean you don't want me to sit by you in this chair at work? What are you talking? You didn't save me a seat? What are you talking about? I didn't suffer from low self-esteem. I was like a total egomaniac and just irritated with others. So this is how I went through life. And thank God I found this group and I got rocketed into this, into this work. And I started to go through and I learned that I did have this craving. And I didn't even know I was an alcoholic, to tell you the truth. I sat in these rooms forever and I would just say I'm an alcoholic. But I always had a sneaking suspicion that I had more problems with other substances. Until I went through the 12 steps and I understood alcoholism. And the most awesome experience happened as I went through, because I hadn't drank for a really long time, but I had to set aside the idea that I was an alcoholic, which was a scary proposition for me, because I thought, I've been in AA for 15 years, now they want me to set aside the idea I'm an alcoholic? And if I'm not, I'm kind of screwed, right? Because I'm in AA now. Like, I've been doing AA. I mean, Bill knew me at that time. I don't know if he sees any difference, but I feel a difference. He asked me to speak at the Ice House, and when I first moved to town, I promise you, if you listen to that weird CD that he has somewhere, and the CD that I did like 30 years ago, there's probably a huge difference. And maybe not, but internally, I promise you, and in my life, externally, is a huge difference after doing these steps. So I started to go through this work, and I found out that I had this craving, that once I put booze in, and how did I know? Because you know when we talk about craving, we feel like, okay, so I put booze in, and then I feel like I need more, but I didn't feel it. So I really had to ask God to help me see these experiences with booze. And how I knew I was an alcoholic, because looking back at my past, I would sit at the bar and I'd order a drink, right? But before I even got there, I had to make sure I had a couple of drinks, because, you know, it was expensive, and I didn't have a lot of money. So I would go, and I'd sit at the bar, and I'd order a drink, and I would not be thinking about sipping this drink and relaxing, having a good time. I'd be thinking about how much money do I have, what's my next drink going to be, how many more can I buy, and who's going to buy me one after that. That's what I'd be thinking. I wasn't enjoying, you know, control and enjoy. No, it's like we talked about, I have no choice. I'm like a woman who lost my legs. My choice was gone. It was cut off. And I'm never going to grow a new leg, which means I'm never going to have power, choice, and control over boots, right? So that was it for me. I was done. I couldn't do it. Once I put that booze in down, and I get chills right now, because it just empowered me. You know, it empowered me, and I loved it. But then at the end, obviously, no matter how much I drank, that self-loathing, that incomprehensible demoralization we talked about feeling like crap, never went away. No matter how much I drank, that stuff in my head about I was a piece of crap, it couldn't drown it out. I couldn't get rid of it. Then we go on to the obsession, and I learned that the obsession was that, you know, what happens when I'm not drinking. So these are all the things I would do to try to, like, combat my booze problem, right? And I would say, okay, I'm going to go to church. I'm going to line up all this stuff. I'm going to call somebody. I'm just going to stay away from it. I'll get a job. I'll get married. I'll, you know, whatever. I'll exercise more. Trying to not drink. And then out of nowhere, I would always find myself, and I shared this with someone not too long ago, but I would always find myself initially with a glass of wine, because I used to smoke back then, right? And I just thought it was so sophisticated to have this glass of wine and a cigarette. And I mean, I'm not even working. I'm just like a bum, right? But for some reason, this is awesome. I'm like, hey, I can't even say this. No one will relate because the actresses I want to talk about are old. So, you know, I discovered I had this obsession, which I called mental illness. And the scary thing about this obsession is that I cannot think my way out of drinking again. And I, like I said, I'm an egomaniac, right? But when it comes to booze, I can't control it. It has control over me. And that was a scary thing for me to think. I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually powerless over this booze, right? Okay, I have a craving. Who cares? Who cares? But now come to find out I have an obsession. See, if I have this obsession, that's kind of the kicker. Because if I have the craving and I can stop drinking, who cares? I'd be fine. But I have an obsession. So the thing is that I can stop drinking for a little while. And then all of a sudden I start feeling like, why am I thinking I can't drink? I'm fine. Why am I listening to these other people? They're dumb, right? Of course I'm going to drink again. What? Or I wouldn't even think at all, and I'd just be drinking, like I said, with the wine and the cigarette. So, reading that and looking at my past experience, I was able to clearly see that I had these two things. And then we look at the last part of step one, which is called the manageability. So now, remember, step one is, came to believe I'm powerless. I'm powerless over alcohol, and dash that my life had become unmanageable, right? And the dash is actually without booze, okay? So even without the booze, and gosh, you guys, how much proof did I need after 15 years? Even without booze, my life is in the crapper, okay? So this is what I have to look at. My life without booze is still horrible. It's unmanageable. I can't get along with people. I can't do anything. So the bottom line is, in step one, I get painted into this corner where I see I'm completely powerless. I have no choice. I've got an allergy. I can't drink, right? I can't stay sober on my own power. And now even though God's given me this gift of staying sober, I can't manage my life in a way where I can force this happy, joyous, and free out of me and everyone around me. I can't force them to be who I need them to be. And so I'm a mess. And what I realized at the end of step one is I came to believe that I needed a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, right? But I had to have that kick butt first step experience in order for me to actually get to this point of step two, which is what I really wanted to focus on tonight, but God will take me wherever He wants. So I have to tell you, in step two, you know, for me to even consider being an agnostic after being raised up in church and in church my whole life, to think that I didn't have a relationship with God was crazy. It was insane. But guess what? I was desperate. Because now I knew the truth about my alcoholism. So I went and I did these exercises, and I had to look at my old ideas about God, you know. And there's a whole bunch of other exercises, too. And I came to find out in step two that I had a belief in God, but I never had any relationship with God. I depended on me. You know, I'm walking around, and by the way, not only do I like to play God in my life, but I like to do it in everyone else's life as well. So it's like, and the bad thing about that is I'll give you a lot of unsolicited advice when I'm untreated. And then the problem is that when you don't do what I ask you to do or tell you to do, then I'm really going to get irritated, right? I'm just going to gossip about you and say what a piece of crap you are. So, you know, it's not good for someone like me, an alcoholic, to not have this relationship with God, because I do a lot of damage to others and I become a tornado. So there were so many places I wanted to read to you guys, but let me see. So in step two, we Gnostic, it says, and this is also at the end of the manageability, our human resources is marshaled by the will. We're not sufficiently filled utterly. Lack of power without certain limit. I had to be free. I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than myself, obviously, but where and how was I to find that power? And so step two is all about where and how, right? And as I'm going through, thank God I got someone in front of me who's showing me how to at least get some kind of little bit of new experience with this power. Because the dilemma in two is, I know I'm sick and I don't want to go back to one, but at the same time, I don't like this whole trying to rely on spiritual health stuff they talk about, because I like to be God. So I don't want to rely on this power that I have no experience with and that I really don't trust. And so really this is what all of step two is. And it doesn't mean I have a conception of God in step two. And it really doesn't mean either that I'm making a choice to be like a more spiritual person. But it just means that I'm willing to believe that there is a power that can move me beyond where I'm currently at living in this life today, you know? And that's all I need to do in step two. And it was amazing from someone who would never even say, I'm an agnostic, right? And then I did all these exercises that are laid out in this book super clearly, and I got this awesome, I have to tell you, this past year, I've taken a ton of women through the work. I'm always working with others. We're the primary purpose group. Our primary purpose is to help suffering alcoholics. And so that's the majority of what I do in AA. And I have had so many powerful experiences and stuff too this year. I mean, I'm just like, God dang, this is important. This is important. And I didn't realize it before. It's only in working with others and doing, like Teddy always says, you know, it's like a circle. It's like step 12 to step 1, and we do it all over again. And in working with others, I get to go through my experience again, and God continues to show me this power, you know, this power that is my life. And I just want to let you guys know that if you don't know what I'm talking about, or you relate to what I'm saying and you haven't been through the work, please find someone that can take you through and that really is familiar with this. Because, by the way, there's promises on every page, you know, and not on every page, because there's a lot of warnings too, but there's a lot of promises, and then every step, there are promises for each step that you do. And I just have to let you know that today, the job that I was working at, before, I was like an outstanding I'll be married to my husband tomorrow for 7 years. We've been together 11. And guess what? I like him a lot. And I love him too, which is a miracle, you know? And we have fun. And I have everything I want. My daughter's doing great. I mean, I just say she's doing great. She's who she is. And you know, I had my aunts over today for lunch, and I have a very close relationship with my mother. And so, you know, we've got several animals, which I just absolutely love. And my life's just awesome. And I get to be of service, and that's one of the most important things to me, is that I can take this message that I've had freely given to me, and I can help people who are dying just like I was. So, thank you so much for allowing me to share a little bit of my story and my experience. And I guess we can open it.
Beautiful. All right, we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. So, we will ask you to just keep that in mind. We're not going to time anybody. We'd love to hear what you have to say, and I'm going to go ahead and turn the meeting back over to Stephanie, and she can pick on some people. We'll alternate between online and in person still.
Okay.
That's very efficient.
I'm going to pick on Erica.
Oh,
hi, Erica.
Hi, Erica.
Thank you so much for your chair. I have like, just bits and pieces here and there. And it's funny because, you know, on the way over here, I kind of, like, rack my brain. What am I going to talk about? What am I going to talk about? And step two is what really came to mind. Because I'm only on step three right now. I mean, I've been through the steps once, so I'm going back through again. And, you know, we just covered part of step three. And I could say so many things that I, you know, that hit home for me on step three. I mean, just a whole page. I just read through some of them. I'm like, that's me. But step two also meant a lot to me, going through, you know, the bedevilment, looking at my relationships. You know, when I had first written out kind of bedevilments, it was more like a step four image. And I consulted my husband, who's also the name, and he was like, no, that's not right. So I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, lucky I have him at home, because then my sponsor was, you're so clear on this. Like, wow. Like, I have to cheat you for this. And so, you know, step two, I didn't realize really even what areas of agnosticism were for me. You know, I remember the first time going through, I thought, yes, I believe in God. Easy. I'm done. You know, but where I was really weeding out the God connection in my life, am I relying on God in certain aspects of my life? Or am I using things that I have learned along the way in my life as, you know, like a coping skill? I'm not turning to God to say, you know, help me in this relationship. Help me through this process. I'm just like, well, let me call and gossip. Let me, you know, do some shopping. And, you know, indulge myself. You know, which are all temporary fixes for me. You know, I wasn't looking for the perfect. So, thank you for picking on me. And I'm just going to pass.
Thanks, Erica. Glad you're here tonight.
Thank you, Erica. So we have Leah W. Online.
Oh, I muted us. Okay, now Stacy's in there.
Okay, how about Stacy S?
Hey, I'm actually just going to... I'm Stacy. How are y'all doing? I'm actually just going to listen tonight. I'm not feeling so hot, so...
Thanks for being here.
Okay, so...
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay. Okay, Teddy B.
My name's Teddy. Teddy. It's great to be here tonight. It's good seeing a lot of familiar faces in the room tonight. Of course, I always like hearing Stephanie share her story, no matter how many times I hear it, it never gets boring. And I'm glad I came to the meeting tonight. So we were just going to sit, I sit home and watch baseball or football games or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I relate to her on a lot of levels, even though our stories might sound a lot different when you get down. But, you know, when it comes down to what alcoholism is, you know, I used to think alcoholism was always out in the club. You know, it's not going to treatment, you know, and I get sobered up. You know, they would say alcohol's the problem. And you would think that your life would start to get better after you got through with the alcohol. See, I start to get worse. You get me away from booze any amount of time, and I start to come unglued at the seams inside. So what I'm left with is completely unbearable. That's on the other side of the dash, what she was talking about with that manageability. You know, I suffer from all those things, the anxiety, the fear, the depression, the boredom. You know, my mind goes 1,000 miles per hour, and, you know, in 100 different directions, you know. And like her, I get very intolerant. I get very judgmental when I'm spiritually separated. Everybody in the room is pissing me off, you know? And that's just, you know, I got to be honest with you, that's how I am. You get me away from this program, these practices, for any amount of time, and this is where I'm at. Thank God that there was Bigfoot, you know? Because I used to think that, you know, my progress report was based on the meetings that I was in. I've been there too. I've been a meeting makers type of person, right? I was going to meeting after meeting after meeting, and I didn't get, you know, I would like go on these little sprees where I'd get better for a while, and I could start sounding really good in the meetings. I could parrot all the one-liners, you know, and I could learn the lingo. But really, at the end of the day, you know, I'm crazy as bad shit at the end of the day. You know, and it's like, well, what's really going on? You know, and it wasn't until I got into the recovery process that I started to shine a light on that. And I think the best disinfectant for defects of character is to go in and pray in and start doing the spiritual exercises that the people develop on those comments. And that's exactly what happened. Exposed a lot of things, you know, and I've been doing this process for a minute, you know, and it doesn't matter how many times I do it or how thorough I am with the process, I can still get in a place where I, you know, I can get spiritually separated. So, you know, on a regular basis, you know, I have to recommit myself back to the process. But, you know, I think that's the way it has to be, because I would love to think that I could just go through the steps and that, you know, now I get free room and board, but you don't really get to graduate. That's not the way it works. My defects of character always creep back in, but they prove to be assets at the end. Because what they do is, it's like, my relationship with God is different than what most people would think. Because I think he pissed off my defects to bring me back in. You know, it's like, without those defects, I don't go to my knees. No. The only time I go to God out of desperation. I don't go to God out of virtue. I'm just not naturally a good person like that. I gotta be brought to my knees based out of desperation. But even I can go to my knees in the morning feeling like Moses, and then I get up onto my feet and I feel like Rambo about a job. So it's like I gotta continuously be bringing God back into my life all throughout the day, you know? So it's like, you know, I don't base my spiritual progress on how many meetings I'm making today, you know, but it's where I'm at spiritually. And, you know, and agnosticism was something that I couldn't buy into, because I was raised up in a church. And so I was like, of course, I'm not agnostic, you know. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought everybody else had their ideas about God wrong because of the ideas that had been instilled in me as a child. So I thought that was the truth, and to break free from that would actually be, you know, an unforgivable sin. But, you know, after a thorough trip through the steps, I found that those, you know, my ideas would just be false. And that's what this, you know, the steps really do. It's not about what I get from the steps, but what I get rid of. You know, and I've gotten rid of a lot of stuff that just wasn't useful, didn't mean anything, and was just completely getting in the way of a relationship with God at the end of the day. You know, but, you know, how could I get moved into being considering something like that? You know, going through, like she said, you know, going through the first step out of the big books about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if I was okay, this is why I don't agree with the idea that acceptance is the answer to all my problems. The idea that I'm powerless over alcohol in my life is unmanageable is completely unacceptable. You know, if that was acceptable, I'd stay in step one. Why do I go to step two? Because I don't like the truth about step one, so I move into step two. I get moved there. I don't just choose into that. I got brought into that place where I ain't got else. There's no other else for a guy like this song. There better be something more than me going into step two. You know, because if I'm left with me on my own power, you guarantee I'm going to drink. You know, and the truth, like the book says, for me to drink is for me to die. You know, and so I know that about myself. You know, and I got a mind that will get me back into a bottle quicker than I can blink my eyes. It's like a twitch of a muscle. I could be in a meeting sounding really good, and then be walking into a liquor store an hour later and have a bottle in my hand. Just like that. And won't have an explanation of what happened. I'll just come to you afterwards. I say my drinking started in a blackout and ended in a blackout. You know, because I go into that blank spot and I end up drunk again. So I know that about me, you know, and it's like, but just knowing that isn't enough. You know, that's why I'm armed with information, all the mental defenses that I try to play out. See, I can't prop up a delusional mental defense if it's going to keep me away from taking the first drink. You know, I'm completely powerless over the starting and the stop. Right? And I can get stopped. My problem was that I could stay stopped. Right? You know, and then when I'm sober, I get completely untreated. That's why I'm very thankful that we have a solution in this book. My life is really good. I'm going to celebrate 7 years of you know, marriage tomorrow with the woman that I absolutely love and adore. 14 years of sobriety, I got to celebrate on the 6th of this month. And I won't take a miracle of what God's done and turn that into a personal accomplishment. You know, I know that's only through His power. And so, you know, these are the things that I get. And that's why I stay close to this process. I stay close to Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship. And in the service part of it, I get to turn around and help other people through the process. You know, these are things that I did not, these are not things I was doing 14 years ago. So I'm very, very grateful that you guys are keeping the door open, Bill. I've known you for years. You seen me when I came in. You know, and I thank people like yourself and all the men and women sitting around this room. Thank you guys for all that you're doing. And it's really good to be here and again, good job tonight. That's enough time.
Thanks, Cindy.
Kathy? Is there any call, Kathy?
No.
Okay.
Kathy, would you like to share with us?
Looks like she's muted. Let's see.
Is that the one with the ski?
Okay. Cassie, would you like to share with us tonight?
All right.
And we'll come back to you. All right, so we're just
Bill.
Up with who's here. There you go.
I don't know if you get called on that one.
You're stuck. Just turn this around. So the people who don't want to share can see who's done. Hey, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Bill Hassman. Thanks for coming out, Stephanie. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about, I remember when we met at the Alano Club. And, you know, I think there's really a powerful lesson in that, because I was probably just a couple years sober at that time, or I mean, not much. And you know, I think it's easy to miss some nuances. So Stephanie talked about how when she came here, you were sober 14, 15 years? 15 years. She was sober 15 years. I don't know about you guys, but you know, somebody walks in and you're kind of new around here, and they've got 15 years sober. I'm kind of thinking, I'm impressed by that, right? And there's a lot good in that. Your life was a whole lot better at 15 years sober than it was 15 years before that, I'm sure. But the point you were making is one that I think really drives home this idea that AA is not. Well, what AA is it's an experience. And what you described tonight was how you have come to some new perceptions about yourself, about the people around you, about the higher power we talk about so freely, that's changed as a result of doing some stuff. And I think I like to give Teddy a hard time. It's been a while since I've done this, so I'll throw this out now. I give Teddy a hard time because we really do have a lot in common. Teddy came on Wednesday night. I think it was the first time you were there,
And he laid down a solid message, man. It was really a great piece of work. And I think he went over by like a minute and 20 seconds or something. And I couldn't help myself. I just, you know, I have a sense of humor that my wife calls peculiar. And I said, now there was a message of depth and weight and length. And I just say that to say that, you know, in our book, it talks about having a message of depth and weight. And I think a lot of times it's easy to not know what that means. What that means, you will know the minute you sit down with somebody who's had the experience that we have by going through the 12 steps and you start going through those exercises because there's no mistaking someone who's had the experience, right? Because you relate on a level that you couldn't imagine. And for me, my perspectives of other people, of the world, began to change. And you know, that's not always so pleasant, you know, because I start seeing how, dang, maybe I had a hand in some of this stuff that, you know, maybe I'm a little bit responsible for some of the stuff I wasn't liking, you know, and probably a lot, in fact, maybe even entirely responsible. But I think the key thing I wanted to just hinge on tonight was just that, that it can be easy to be impressed with someone who has a duration of sobriety, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what I want to tell you is that if you settle for that, you are selling yourself short, man. I would say that the 15 years that Stephanie showed up here with were not wasted. There was good in that. But the things that she has done, the things I've done, I know Teddy and I have been friends for a long time. The things we have done go so far beyond just not drinking. And so I just encourage you to, you know, if you haven't given this thing a good honest try, if you haven't sat down with somebody who really has an answer for this problem that we have, and it's not just about the booze, I hope you'll try it because it will change your life. That's all I got to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Jerry?
I've been sober. I haven't drank in a year, but I do. I'm one of the kind of people. This is coming back. I started 11 years old, and cocaine and alcohol so was around. When the microphone was with this crank, all that stuff, acid, let me pull my head. And I'm 57, so I started in the 70s. It's non-stop. I've only been sober this year. And I've been in and out of the system since I was a kid. Before I even hit full with the system. And I barely got free of that in 2015. So I've been out for 7 years now. But the year, well, I'll tell you a story. I was so bad, so I lost three lives. I got three sets of kids from three different wives. Hell, they were around my kids because every time I turn around, I was back in jail. Except for my oldest daughter, who was just dying soon, now bearing her own hand, and my poor grandkids. She stuck back. Where's my kids? They see me coming as the dopamine and trying to be something else. And I can't help them. You know what I mean? I can't change what happened in the past. I can't take it back. But I was one of those. There's a party up there. There's a lot of them on it. There's a line. I'm taking it. And I'm still not strong enough to be around. You know, like I got the itches right now. So this. Start talking about it. I start wanting it. You know what I mean? It's kind of hard on me. But I've been sober, and my roommate drinks, and that's real rough, you know what I mean? So when she starts popping cans, I can room, you know. And like you said, too, I people just make sick. Everyone just being interesting. But I would drink and I'm 10 foot tall and bulletproof, you know, so I don't care. But being sober, you know, I see people different. I see myself different. And I'm not angry. It's awful. Parents were, you know, drunk, drugs, alcohol, cholesterol, drugs, all side effects. So we didn't have work then. So I don't talk to anybody hardly ever. I took him a month ago. I'll stay for 5 minutes. You know, cause I know that I talked to my brother. He's a lot. So I got to get out. My older brother's, I put on his pad. He's trying to recover, but he's still, you know, horrible. So I stay away from that. It's really hard. I mean, it's really, really hard. And I made it. You know what I mean? So I just cut my hair recently, trying to look normal. But I left my hometown. I was depressed with all my kids and stuff. I'm originally from Minnesota, from a little patient. Came down here to get out of trouble. When I was a kid. So as soon as I got here, I was in trouble. And you can come out of this old saying, no matter where you go, where you are. You know, I just jumped back to a crowd, same crowd, you know, same people. Hey, you know, it's kind of weird, too, because no matter where you go, they go. But when I came here, it was different. I was trying to run away. You know, I got on my Harley, packed a tent, edible. Take off, I went to the set, from the set, I said, take it in mind, I decided to go to Georgia. So I got friends over there, they party too, so I just slipped right in. It's a different crowd, I figured that, different people. I see them a while. I get to Visalia, and I get that death bubble. So I stop at Visalia Harley, and he takes it for free. I'm thinking, oh, this is the way, I'm just trying to get me to go to Georgia, you know? So I'm taking off down the freeway, and I stop at Tulare, I stopped there. And I got a sandwich, I got on my bike and started sitting on gas. I thought, it's from this bike, and sticks to me. So I went up in a tent, I can't fix it. I went up in a tent, and I'm up there by the freeway, and I'm calling everybody, nobody knows me. This is probably what they're trying to get around, I was gone. But one of my daughter's friends tells me, says, hey, sweet pop, my mom was in Visalia. She had a garage, I'm like, should I? A gas, they came and picked me up. Didn't tell her mom. She had a funny teeth. This lady comes home for a couple days, and I'm like, oh, gosh, this mom here. What are you doing here? And I'm like, it's not right. Who are you? And I told her, did your daughter? Oh, man. So I introduced myself. My daughter and her daughter. And we start talking. She makes me rude. And all of a sudden, she's a Christian. You know what I mean? But she drinks beer at that. You know what I mean? And she's 3 beers every night. There's 2 cases. I looked at that. I was like, oh. You know, what the heck? You know? And then she said, you can't have my beer. So that was pretty cool. And I didn't want to go to the store and get one. I looked at her and I said, you know what? I don't need this. And I was always taught, because like my dad's one of the far four kids. God was, you know, that's Jewish, you know, you walk the red bone, you know, tradition. So that was oh yeah, what's an agnostic? I mean, I didn't just talk about agnostic. What is that? That's, I don't even know what that means. All I know is walk the red bone, you know what I mean? And red bone, you're sober. It's kind of like, it's not Christianity, it's, I don't know what it's like, but we have a strict code, which I didn't follow, so I was cast out. And all through the system, you know what I mean? I'm on air and actually doing this stuff. If I can't be outside, I'll be cool. So I spent my time in there, soccer, whatever I can find. But this one last year, I didn't make it to Georgia, very last year. I just quit. It sucked. I didn't call it God or whatever. No, I just got tired. So grandfather, I'm tired. And, you know, I don't want no more. It's just gone. You said craving? I don't know about that, because I have to admit, if you throw a bottle on the floor right there, and you throw a bag on the floor, I've tried. You know what I mean? And that leads to questions for me. So I stayed with him. I know it. The guys are crazy because you go down the street, you see liquor stores in the corner, and I'm like, I used to carry a bottle of JD. That's hard just to look at it and say, you know, if it's there, and you have me a bottle, I'm not going to say I'm not going to drink it. I'm going to take it. And then we'll see me no more. So I just, he's gone. It's in the minute. So I stay away. I stay home, I go to work, and I come home. Take showers, I have a spread, so that's a bit. My daughter is with me now, like I said, she's the one that's stuck with me, always fishing me. You could do better with this. She's 28 now, I'm just supposed to start life. But she finds me because she's still with her dad, she's still in love with her dad, she's still trying to get me a better person, you know. And I love that, you know. My older brother, that's, you know, he's, I have six brothers, three sisters, and they all party. You know, my mom's side, everybody. My dad, especially Indians, get drunk all the time. It's always the problems. It's just the problems. So, coming over here, you know, since I've been here, I've sold a little bit of the end of my life. That's not that nice. You throw that, I don't know if you throw that attention. But it's, the craving is gone. I mean, I don't sit there and think it's fine. I don't sit there and think that I'm going to die. But if I see it, and then when you talk about it, so you ever get that little tickle out of your jaw? So I'm making this up. And if you sit there, you start, like with me, I get a little itchy. Because I, the more you talk about alcohol, you know, I know there's a store around the corner. I got to get a bunch of my pocket. But it's, that's, and really, I'm going to tell you, the reason why I'm here, like I said, I was sober for a year, I've been here for a year now, and I got a knock on the door about 2 months ago, and it was police. And I had forgotten all about this drunk driving again. Dismissed it, because I was drunk. And I was loaded. So I just said, I'm going to charge this week, and you know, I had a knock on the door, and they quickly popped me, arrested me, took me to prison. And the judge wants me to do the meetings. I'm angry about that. You know, because I don't mean to quit. But I've been to Portland. This is my fifth meeting. You know, and I travel all around. I always took the city stuff. That was my next year at the church. What they earlier did. And I was Selma, Fresno, those houses in Hanford, whatever the house I was, I can't remember. Anyway. And I listened to people talk, and it's pretty cool. You know what I mean? Because you all have some of these stories. We all have some of these stories. We're all torn back. Somewhere. Something went wrong. You know. Whatever the cause was, but we enjoyed it to the point of just take it to court. You know? And it ruined our lives. You know, in my case, it ruined our lives. Because everybody else, if I met you, you didn't drink, guess what? But if I met you, you didn't die, guess what? You know what I mean? Come on, buddy. You know, because I hate to party alone. And if I do have to party alone, it's a drag, I don't do it. But since I've been going next, it's only been four or five weeks. So I listen to people talk and the demons that are inside. You know what I mean? And I have the same ones. And I know that they reach out, they grab you. I know they do. Because I feel that. You know what I mean? That sometimes you feel like, you know, I've never been. I had a confidence problem, I never had that. But I've had an adequacy that's a little different. I mean, I know I can do whatever I want, but sometimes I get an adequacy, you know what I mean? It's a little different. You know, I could do it, but you know, just jump off it right now, you know? And that demon will grab me. And my cure was to do shots at the bottom and roll. Can't test the temperature on bulletproof. Yeah, this is done with bike and ride. Can't test. But as soon as I got sober, that shame and that guilt, because I think back to that, I've got four kids that look at me like, man, dude, you've been around for maybe a month or two in my life. In fact, you're up for a year or two, 3 years, and you come back out and you say, I asked this baby. You know, and the only one that's something is my daughter. My other daughter, she was like, My son would be getting followed by footsteps, and I couldn't stop that. And now that I'm sober, I look at the past. Not intentionally, there's no like a party. I mean, I was that guy. He threw a party, I'd be the one out there dancing, singing, and after the pool. And the next minute, you know, you can't do the things you do when you're drunk, man. I woke up. My blood naked, close to the grandma, you know. Those days, you kind of woke up on the street. I woke up in the fair one time.
Yeah. You had a concession. Hey, Jerry, let's give some time to some other folks, too. But thank you for being here, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, right on.
Okay, Mike.
Oh, Mike's online. Michael, would you like to share with us tonight?
Am I the Mike you speak of?
Yes.
Hey, guys, Mike, alcoholic.
Thank you.
Hey, today was a pretty busy day. I want to apologize. I tried to check in online. I was in church. Church was running a little late. Connection issues. Didn't get to hear a whole lot of Stephanie's story, which I'm regretting because it sounds like it was a really good one. But, as I was pulling up, I got a call from somebody else in the program, and I needed to talk to him for a minute. But, I feel a little unprepared to speak right now. I didn't get a whole lot of Stephanie share to share, but I had a little experience right now with what I was going through in with a conversation with another man from this group. And as he was asking me about his problems, and I was talking to him about those problems while I have those same problems, and I got to realize some deep lining issues within my own problems that I hadn't even looked at yet. Here I am giving advice to somebody when I haven't even cleaned my own house yet. And in the process of giving him that advice, I get the, hey, dummy, you should probably take some of that advice for yourself, you know? And it was pretty cool that, because I've had this problem for years, and I didn't look at it the way I should have looked at it until a couple minutes ago when I was having this phone call and I was telling someone else to look at it a certain way. It's little things like that this program offers to me that help me change my way of thinking. That a higher power comes in, and sometimes I receive a message from someone who's still sick, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I was going to try to make it down there with you guys tonight. It just situation didn't let it go, but I'm going to let somebody else talk that maybe got a little bit more of Stephanie's story and to speak a little more on it. Appreciate you calling me, though.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Okay. Should it be Stephanie
for anyone who
wants to share?
Your turn.
Does anybody want to share or?
I will have to ask you to use your outdoor voice because the microphone's all the way up here.
Okay. I shouldn't have a problem doing that. So, I got about 56 days to make questions. And I've been in a safe environment. So I was in the vision and just recently left. Today is my first night out, so I haven't been seen. I'm kind of nervous. I'm glad I'm meeting people around me. Like me, I don't have time to be alone. That's where my problems come in. So I'm trying, I think I do appreciate, I have three kids at home that are going to keep me on my feet. But honestly, they've never just over beforehand, so it's kind of scary. I can't just rely on them. So I've been in my book a lot, working with kids, talking to people and going to meetings. Yeah, but, I did just get a job. That's, I mean, I haven't worked a real job in years, you know? So, obviously, there's people see changes in me so far, since it seems unemployable, but that's awesome. That's exciting. But, I'm nervous. I know I don't have it all together yet. It's going to be a long time. But, as long as I stay, I've done a lot of rehab before, and I knew this that. I get all the stuff done and get going and working and stuff and stuff while I'm there. But as soon as I leave, I get super complacent and comfortable at home thinking I got it all together and end up slacking off. And so I know I can't do that this time. I really want to stay sober. I need to stay involved. So, and I enjoy it. Like, I really do. All the functions I do, they're fun. You know, you can have real fun being sober. So I'm excited. There's quite a few questions coming up and stuff like that. I know that I'm reaching ballers here. It's something I know I have to do to stay connected. And I'm looking for a service committee myself. Pretty much all I have is to try to get all my little ducks in a row. Not my little ducks at home, but get all my eggs in the basket. Continue on living sober.
Right on. Thank you.
Anyone else want to share?
That's a name she can picture.
Okay, guys. So, we will do... Who is Uncle to be Jim?
Oh. Oh, both Timmy or Jim. I guess I'm on TV. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Stephanie, for sharing tonight. Everybody else. I need to come to these meetings to remind me, and I'm an alcoholic because I get to listen to you. So, throughout the day, I can tend to forget that I've got any problems at all. And it seems like, especially with this, because life has its own enormity of problems. And when you're not drinking, it's easy to forget that alcohol is probably, if I were drinking again, the grandest of them all. But I'm so thankful to be sober, and I'm so thankful to be able to come to meetings and see your positions here and to hear Stephanie with, you know, calculating your sobriety. That's a lot of years. Minus the 15 in the front. Right? I guess I already said that didn't count. No. It's not pretty close. No. We don't judge here. What's that called? I'm not sitting here. I had so many great things to share, and let me just go. I'll tell you right now, life currently is really difficult. It's not difficult, it's busy and exhausting, and with children at home in high school, and one off kind of in college, and a wife, and then, you know, you got dogs and bills and car problems, keeping up with the Joneses. It never ends. It never ends. And I have to be careful with this, because these are all those things that I just had reasons that I used to drink over, which... Because then I'd be pissed that I had to pay a bill, of course. I use the electricity, I just don't want to pay the bill on the electricity. Or
it took away from a trip or something like that. My biggest problem today is my relationship with God and staying in daily meditation with Him. Because I know that if I'm close to God in the morning, my day goes well. It does. And then I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to totally forget. And I'm going to not do my prayers. Or I'm not going to give this day to my higher power, who I call God. And then little things start happening. And little things start adding up. But I wonder, why is this happening today? And then as I reflect upon my day in the evening, it's because I forgot to start my day just putting Him forward. When I first came into AA, couldn't drink. It was tough. That's tough. And then it's not hard to not drink. Then life happens, and that's tough. And God, when I first came in here, I was a little mad at God. So I decided He's going to be my way out. And I'm going to be swimming behind God as my whale in the deep, dark ocean. And when all this other crud comes along, God's going to swat everything out of the way for me. And that's how I need to put every day still. I forget that he'll get there, or she'll, whatever you want to call her. But I just got to put Him first. And today I didn't. Yesterday I might have, but I'm envious of people who do that, like systematically. In the morning, they wake up and they say, I have my hour and a half of meditation and prayer time. And I'm like, oh, jeez. You know? And I'm like, I did it. But today, I shouldn't promise you anything, but this week, in the front, I'm going to try to wake up and give my day to God so it just goes better. So I'm thankful to be here, and I'm thankful to be sober, and my wife still loves me, and I still have kids in the house, and I didn't destroy everything from my drink. But it was that close. It was that close. So,
thanks, Jimmy. So I'm an alcoholic, Phil Aspen. Unfortunately, that kind of brings to the end of our time together this week. I do want to make sure to let you know that the Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If anyone is in need of sponsorship or is available to sponsor, we'd be happy to take your information and get you connected with our sponsor coordinator. Does anybody have any announcements they'd like to make? I'll make an announcement. We have Soberfest coming up. Not this coming Saturday, but the Saturday after that, Saturday, October 16th. Pat O'Fullerton is going to be in town. We're going to have a tri-tip dinner. If you'd like to join us for dinner, there are tickets available. They're $15 a piece. If you have other dinner plans, you're welcome to come at 7 o'clock. It's an open meeting. There's no cost to attend. And the meeting will also be streamed on Zoom. So if you can't make it, you can still attend remotely. So there's flyers up here about that, and there's tickets available here.
It is Saturday.
It is Saturday.
It's this coming Saturday.
No, it's the 16th, next weekend.
Yeah.